Hey, Lights, Camera, Barstool listeners, you can find us every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Hello, it's me again, Jeff D. Lowe. What's going on? As you can tell, if I'm doing one of these things, it means I'm not on the podcast. Schedule's just tough to line up right now. For those unaware, I'm on this reality show, this reality competition that we're doing at Barstool called Barstool versus America. It's not that I'm, it's less than I'm not a competitor. I'm not on it. I'm the host. I get to be Jeff Probst, which is, I don't want to say a dream come true because I didn't know I ever wanted to do this, but this is fucking amazing. I'll be honest. It's one of the coolest things. I came into this very tired from our trivia tournament thing, and it's like I got a second life, second wind, because this is the fucking coolest thing I've ever done in my life. It's awesome. The guy building our physical challenges is the same guy who builds the challenges for The Challenge on MTV, American Ninja Warrior, The Amazing Race. This guy is a reality competition legend. He's here building these games, the scale, the size. It's awesome. I'm fucking fired up. It's been a blast. We were in Dallas, Panama City Beach, which I will say, the timing to record the previous podcast was not the issue. They just didn't have Wi-Fi. Just flat. I mean, Panama City Beach, what are we doing here? Nashville did have Wi-Fi, but schedules didn't line up, unfortunately. Hopefully I can record the midweek podcast. If not, I'll for sure be back Sunday because we'll be back in New York off this trip. Anyway, this show's going to air in July. I'm pumped for anyone who listens to this podcast to watch it. I think you're going to like it no matter who you are. Even if this is the only Barstool content you consume, or depending on whatever you consume of other Barstool content, give it a watch. If I'm not at least 50% as good as Jeff Probst, then can me. Get me out of here. Chase me on out of here. I'm actually, by the way, the College World Series is going on across the street from my hotel room window right now, but the fucking Vanderbilt football stadium is blocking it, which is just deeply unfortunate that I can't see the baseball stadium. Anyway, I feel like this is going to be a little longer because I feel like I owe you guys some, guys and gals, excuse me, some discussion points. Conjuring, that's what they're about to review in the podcast. I have no idea if Ken Jeck or Trill liked it. Fairly large step down from the first two, the main Conjurings, which I think it was, you kind of expected that, right? First and second, I don't think they're masterpieces, but I think they're pretty damn good for the horror genre. But really, so many of the other ones, the connections and the universe stuff, they have been great. I think Annabelle Creation was the other one that was closer to decent, even though it was fairly below average. So I'm not shocked that this one, now they have all these other offshoot universe ones, this one kind of hurt a bit. So, and not terrible, not even average, but not awful. Like, you know us with this podcast, when a horror movie's bad, we really hate it. Score for this movie, I'd probably say 64. I actually didn't really dislike it all that much, but it lacked a good step at least behind the other Conjuring movies. So that's the review of that. Otherwise, I'm watching like one new episode of, not new, one old episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm each night. But yeah, again, sorry I'm not on the podcast. I fucking hate not being on, but you know us with our schedules and, you know, we have family, man. It's tough to line it up, and I'd rather at least two of us get to record the podcast, Ken, Jack, and Trill, than not me. Hopefully I can record later in the week. Like I said, if not, I'll be back Sunday. I am going to pack because we have to go to Chicago tomorrow. If you're in Chicago, by the way, if you're a fan of this podcast or the Dozen or anything Barstool, if you're in Chicago, we'll be in Wrigleyville on Tuesday night with a High Noon sponsored happy hour. So come on by, say hello, we'll chat, all of that. Make sure to do that. Make sure to buy the new Ricky Bobby shirt we got. Very awesome. I'm now going to pack, and then I'm going to watch the first two episodes of Loki. So you listen to 4 minutes and 5 seconds of this thinking, oh, Jeff, nice message. Now you're probably saying, go fuck yourself. I hope it's good. Cannot wait. Sorry again for not being able to be on the podcast. Glad I could throw you a little note. I'm now going to go put this in front of the podcast, upload it, put the time codes in, post it, and then you'll listen, you'll enjoy. Thank you very much. Swipe up, whatever you do, subscribe, rate, unsubscribe, 5 stars, movierankings.net, buy a shirt, yada, yada, yada. Here's the podcast.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 364. It is me, Ken Jack, joined by Troy Ballins. No Jeff on this episode, but we got a jam-packed one. Well, jam-packed by that, I mean we have 4 news items and then a review of The Conjuring and then an actually fun draft, I think. We're doing a draft of jerseys, just any jersey, any sport. And we have the first use of a audience czar member. So I picked one person, and their list is the one that we're going to use. So if you have any qualms with it, you go to them, and I'll reveal them later.
So it's just jerseys in general. It's not player-specific jerseys.
I think that helps set the mood better too. Like if you have a specific player in mind for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I didn't plan for the player specific, but I was thinking about my number one pick would be a Coutinho Mobley Grizzlies jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's my favorite jersey of all time for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. Like I think it definitely helps set the mood when you pick like the certain player. Like if I were to pick, obviously Chargers Powder Blue is going to be the top of my list. Like I'm not going to be like, Sean Phillips specifically, Purdue alum, just love that guy in the Chargers Powder Blue, like, you know, a BLT. Like it's always going to be a certain player behind anything.
Yeah. But I feel like the player jersey combination to like make that funny is it has to be kind of ironic. Mm-hmm. Like either a player you just normally would never think of, or it's tough to make it work, but just like a ridiculous, I don't know. It's kind of hard to do, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess like it's like in the same vein of like why people or like why dudes started wearing ironic jerseys to music festivals, even though I think that trend's been played out. I don't go to music festivals, so I'd imagine that they probably don't do that anymore. It was like a 5 year ago sort of thing, right?
I actually think it's very much still a thing. I do think people are still very much wearing retro jerseys to music festivals. But also, like, there's certain, like you're saying, almost ironic ones, like the Space Jam guy. There's always a Space Jam guy there. And, like, the Toon Squad jersey. But, like, I think if you go there and you have a legitimately cool jersey, like, you're the guy there that doesn't have, like, the same one everyone else has. Like, if you have the retro Raptors or something, like, I think that's cool. I can't help myself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Patrick Bateman business card thing. It's like that's what all the dudes who wear jerseys and music festivals are doing to see who has the best, like most obscure or ironic retro jersey. And you know, like you're saying, like the Toon Squad's played out, but yeah, if you can show up with if you can show up, like what's the platonic ideal of like a retro music festival jersey? Like I would say the Raptors Vince Carter probably is it.
Raptors Vince Carter, I would say probably retro Charles Barkley is up there. I've seen that a few times. There's a few other.
What about like Grant Hill Detroit Pistons with
the blue teal? The teal, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably on the list. But you can't just show up like maybe a Michael Jordan 12 jersey from the one time he wore 12.
I've seen Michael Jordan Wizards a lot, actually, which is weird.
What about the Jordan 45? I mean, that's still kind of like well known. I guess. I mean, everybody knows who Michael Jordan is. You can't just wear that to a music festival.
One guy yelling at him like, that wasn't even his number, idiot. You got scammed.
What if it was like a Charlie Ward New York Knicks jersey? People like Charlie Ward. He's like, yeah, he won the Heisman, remember? And then people were mad at him because he didn't play in the NFL, but he went on to play like the NBA for 12 years and make a shit ton of money and not destroy his body. Mm-hmm. Charlie Ward won that one.
Definitely won that exchange. But yeah, instead of the platonic ideal, I think the platonic ideal is you have 3 guys, all very sweaty, all wearing backwards flat brims. One is named Matt, one is named Ryan, one is named Chris, and they're all just battling out for who has the coolest jersey, a la that scene from American Psycho.
And like 5 years ago, they would have been wearing 7-inch inseam shorts, but now they're wearing 5-inch inseam shorts.
Oh, yeah. 5-inch inseam shorts and like, I'm trying to imagine the shoes because they don't want to wear ignite. It's probably flip-flop, probably
spuds. Well, checkerboard Vans with some high socks, maybe.
Well, if you're outdoors, you're going to get them dirty. That probably doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, maybe some flip-flops. Anyway, I've never been to a real music festival, so I don't even know. I know it's a thing from the internet.
I feel like that's most of my exposure for a lot of things. I've only been to, I think, 2. And I think the first even pseudo music festival I went to. Like Springfest was like my first introduction at in like college to an event like that, which is a massive musical gathering, but that's like a college thing and it's so small scale. But then after that, like Izu once, and that was, I was like, I'm good with that. I'm fine.
I remember one time in college, like there was a big headliner that was going to play, you know, they always brought on a big spring act for something similar to what you're saying. And that headliner canceled and they replaced him with John Popper of Blues Traveler. And I wouldn't have gone to see the original, but I went to go see John Popper of Blues Traveler. It speaks to my music taste, but then I got, and he was very good, but like I got there and I was like, God damn, I hope he's wearing the harmonica vest. I hope he's wearing the harmonica vest. And I actually don't remember if he was wearing the harmonica vest or not, but that's part of his look.
I think ours was Third Eye Blind. It was Third Eye Blind and it rocked. It was really cool.
Tell me, like, how's it gonna be? The Third Eye Blind, right? Third Eye Blind, sorry. I'm on like two cups of coffee in the last hour. I got a new Keurig machine today. I haven't had a Keurig in years, and I'm because I had the Nespresso, which by all accounts is better coffee, but it's not the watery ass American coffee I know and love.
Yeah.
So I had to get that office coffee Keurig just to get my fix. And so I'm a little jittery right now. So I'm sorry.
K-cup coffee tastes like you took a regular cup of coffee and just let ice like dissolve into it for like over the course of, and like, it wasn't like it was like a hot room or something. Like it dissolved into that coffee over the course of like 4 hours. And then like you went back to go drink it. That's K-cup coffee, but it serves its purpose always, which I'll give K-cups credit for.
It's like 90% of the way to a good cup of coffee. Or like just, let's just say like, not like a coffee snob, good cup of coffee, but just like a good, like, you know, diner cup of coffee, like just a strong, you know, coffee that comes out of a metal carafe or pitcher or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
K-Cup's like 90% of the way there, I think. They're getting closer each year. They innovate. The next year will be the L Cup and then the M Cup. Who knows what comes after that?
So speaking of energy, by the way, I got, and you're looking at it now, Tro, I got the Rock energy drink, Zoa.
Mm-hmm.
And have you tried it yet?
I haven't. I'm let me see the calorie count. Is that zero cal?
It's zero. Well, so this is zero. 15 calories, but it's like zero sugar.
So I get a question. Everybody's doing this now. Okay. So tell me how Zoa is and I'll go into my tirade.
So the one good thing I have to report about it is that it, Like, remember how we clowned on the Rock a bit for putting it into a glass, like with ice?
Yeah.
Absolutely meant to be consumed that way because it tastes flat. Like it doesn't taste like a carbonated energy drink. So like when I took that first sip, it was almost more like a juice.
Really? So is it carbonated or just lightly?
It definitely carbonated? Is carbonated, but I think like at the lightest possible carbonated touch ever. And I had two, so I just double checked.
Which by the way, like, 80% of what you want out of an energy drink is to feel like you're slicing your throat open with carbonation.
Exactly. You want that fizzy, like just whatever, just going down your esophagus, like all the way down your gut and just like burning your stomach like battery acid.
But was it good though? I mean, would you get it again? So, if you were in a store and you had your pick, would you pick Zoa?
Well, number one, it was $4 a pop at CVS. So that's a no from that standpoint. And the original flavor wasn't good, but I got the pineapple coconut pretty good. Pretty damn good. It was like a pina colada.
Yeah. So what was it, 15 calories with zero sugar? I guess my question is like, so Rockstar changed the white Rockstar, right? Like they rebranded it, went to a different label, but they also changed the beverage itself. And in the process, it's still zero sugar, sugar free or whatever you want to call it. But it went from 5 calories to 25 calories a can. And I'm very curious what's in there to make a 5X jump in calories. Anyway, I prefer the old formula. So if anybody's listening from Rockstar, go back to the cans. Like sometimes you'll find them in convenience stores and they still have Cyberpunk 2077 ads on them.
That's how you know.
Yeah, and you know you got to get it. It's like when you see zombie dust on the shelf or you know some rare IPA, you're like, oh shit, I got to pick this up. I don't know, when I'll be able to find it again.
Or OG Jack 3D makes you seem like you're on meth. But yeah, those are the best ones. Do you have a video game update, by the way?
I don't really. I've still been playing. I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 every night, which is perfect because it's a game that I want to play for about 90 minutes. And then I'm like, okay, I'm tired of this for the night. But then the next day I still want to play it. So it's like, it's just filling that slot of like giving me something else to do to unwind between the hours of, you know, 9:30 and 11 when I go to bed. But it still is like very much, it still is very much an MMORPG, right?
There you go.
That's how you say it. Yeah. And there's things I like about those games, but then there's also things I hate about them. Like the thing I like is like the thing I like about any game that is like big is like, I like upgrading equipment. I like gear. And that translates to me like personally in my life. Like I like to buy new shoes. So in clothing. And so when I get into a video game that lets me do it, I like it, but then it has the bad parts of the online RPG and that like to complete a quest, you're going from here to here to here to here to here. And then like slaying three like dragons and then collecting the dragon's fangs. So the good news is on this one versus when I used to play World of Warcraft is like, you'd have to kill 25 dragons just for three dragon fangs drops. And this one is just like, go kill three animals or dragons. I'm gonna say dragons because killing animals just sounds psychotic when you say it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a weird phrasing on that. I wish you didn't say it because I didn't think of dragons as animals until this second.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's better to just say like, because they do have you kill like animals in the game, but they're mystical animals, but animals nonetheless.
Yeah.
It's for good reason. It's to provide an NPC with some like material to make an NPC house. I don't know.
You know what I hate? What animal I despise? Komodo dragons. Every time I see them, it's like, it's same with crocodiles. It's like seeing a dinosaur, you know? I hate even looking at them. They freak me out.
See, I've expressed my hate for crocodiles, and I like alligators a little more than crocodiles, but I love things that look like lizards. To me, lizards just look like they're chilling.
But a Komodo though, because Komodos seem like they walk around and like they're built like so thick, like
they're gigantic.
Yeah, they have like really thick arms, legs, and all that, and they have that long ass tongue thing that slithers out.
No, but it's still got that chill lizard vibe. You know, like every time if you were to make a cartoon iguana, what would you have to put on that iguana?
Getting slizzard tonight.
You have to put a pair of sunglasses on the iguana, right? Like, if you Google cartoon iguana, how many iguanas are wearing a pair of sunglasses? There's this natural inclination to just make lizards chill. And I feel like Komodo dragons, even though they'll kill you from a distance, seem pretty chill. They got a forked tongue.
It'd be great marketing actually for like a new energy drink brand. Just like have their mascot be a Komodo dragon with sunglasses on. Give it like a nice pair of Ray-Bans or whatever. I would buy that.
Dude, lizards are just, except for chameleons, because they're, you got to see the chameleon's eyes to get the full chameleon effect, but lizards are just made to wear sunglasses.
Mm-hmm. The one picture of what's it called? It's like a cartoon of Godzilla, and he's saying that wasn't very cash money of you. Like that, I think about that picture all the time, and I agree with you. That is a very great lizard look to be a sunglasses guy.
Lizards are... if I'm president, I'm just saying like we have to have a pair of sunglasses on every lizard by 2030. it's gotta happen. Like they're the cool dudes of nature. They're just out there chilling, and they need some Maui Jims just to complete the look.
do they wear the I always forget the name of these things because I never use them. The things that hold your sunglasses on your head,
the croakies.
Yeah.
No, they don't wear croakies. I don't think that would hold on because I don't think there's not much depth, right? And they have to be super tight to keep them on the lizard head.
True. But how else would you keep them? I don't know. We're thinking too deep into the lore of this lizard. But there is definitely a disproportionate amount of cartoon lizards with sunglasses compared to, I think, almost any other lizard.
Well, I just Googled the iguana cartoon and none of them were wearing sunglasses. So it just devastates. No, they're all...
You just got mandala affected. It's okay.
They're all clip art, but... See, iguana sunglasses. I bet that sounds like a brand. I bet that's a brand of sunglasses.
Iguana shades, for sure.
I just don't know. Like, they need to make a Rango too, is what I'm trying to say.
I would absolutely watch the hell if he and he wore sunglasses in that. No, he definitely wore Rango. Definitely wore sunglasses at some point. Rango sunglasses. Please don't fucking let me down here. I'm going to be so upset. Rango wearing. Yeah. Okay. This might be a Photoshop just because it was supposed to be Fear and Loathing.
What's the Fear and Loathing? Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
I wish somebody made the exact same shirt Rango is wearing, because that's, you know, the short
sleeve, nice
red. Yeah. Red floral. I want that, actually. I want the Rango shirt.
Hello, I'm Rango.
I'm Rango. I'm a chameleon. I'm here just four chameleons from Liverpool.
Before we get into our news items, going to talk to you really quick about 3Chi. We've talked about 3Chi all the time. Awesome, awesome products. Pronounced 3Chi. It rhymes. It's the industry leader in Delta-8 THC products. All their products are formulated by a biochemist and made in the USA with USA-grown hemp. 3Chi's Delta-8 is a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you like that awesome, like, I think the best way to describe it is like the body feel, but with like without the sort of anxiety-inducing effect that like regular like pot products will give you. And again, not CBD. Not CBD. It's Delta-8 THC. It's going to give you that really, really good, like, full buzz that you'd expect from other marijuana products. It's available on 3chi.com. That's the number 3chi.com, and it retails around the country. You must be 21 years or older to purchase. And remember, again, psychoactive. It's going to give you the buzz, so use it responsibly. Again, go to 3chi.com, the number 3chi.com, to shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Use code CAMERA at checkout to get 5% off of your order. We use 3chi all the time. They sent us some really, really good, what do you call it? Like, it was like, we talked about these before, but the Rice Krispie treats, the cookies, like the Fruity Pebble crispy treat edible thing was amazing. It's so good. But again, be test your limits first, I would say, when you're trying them. Don't go full crazy with it on your first try. Again, 3G's awesome. Check it out. Trey, you found it? You found the shirt?
It's kind of like it, I think. It's not the exact same shirt, which I think is also similar to something that may have been in the Fear and Loathing movie, but it's close enough. It's close enough to where you say, like, hey, this is the... You told people you bought, like, you, this is a real movie prop from the set of Rango. I was like, this is the shirt the lizard was wearing.
They would believe Adam Sandler definitely wore this in 50 First Dates. I'm almost 100% positive. Like, the scenes where he's like courting Drew Barrymore in that. Like,
Drew,
hey, baby, I'm Drew Barry. I'm here to soothe you with my dulcet jazz. That would be a great name for a jazz artist.
Drew Barry?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
it's good flow to it. I don't know.
I mean, it's, you know, it makes me think of Drew Carey.
A little bit. Drew Carey more.
You know what? You know, like, Vince Vaughn should launch a line of Hawaiian shirts and sell it at Macy's. How popular would that be?
Very.
He seems like a big Hawaiian shirt guy, right? Just because he's a bigger dude. Like, not in a bad way. He's tall.
Tall. That's what I was about to say. I feel like he probably has a line of something in a big and tall store somewhere, right?
I mean, it seems like a good way to dilute your own personal brand in terms of having a line of clothing that, if, you know, I don't think it would work for Vince Vaughn, but like, I do, you know, like Bill Murray has a golf brand, right? It's like William Murray. Like, Vince Vaughn should just do that, but it should just be for like Hawaiian, just hanging out shirts.
Let Sandler do the same thing for XL-sized only gym shorts and way oversized t-shirts. Again, so, I would also buy those at a premium.
Dude, I actually think if like Target did, you know how Target does those collaborations? If Target did like a collaboration, like Adam Sandler x Target, and just had like,
oh my
Adam
God.
Like, just Adam Sandler went through and just picked out what the collection would be. Like, they would definitely sell out, because I don't think they would make that much, but that's just like, talk about, like, that'd be just one of the best things I've ever seen. I don't know how to describe it. I think it would lose money by the time you cashed out on Adam Sandler and paid him everything. But I would just love to see people flooding into Target to buy basketball shorts and, I don't know, like a big puffer jacket that's like the medium size, has like a 52-inch chest on it.
I would know. You think you, that's a no brainer. 100%. Like, the crossover there is just insane. And he, out of almost any celebrity to have, like, they do what, like Chip and Joanna at Target? Like, fuck that. Do Adam Sandler.
They've done, They do a lot of collaborations at Target, but I think that would get a lot of they'll get a lot of buzz, get a lot of eyeballs on that. I think Adam Sandler would also never do it, but if he's listening, he should think about it. I would just love to go in. Imagine the Target dog is just, they're using the Target dog for promo for like Adam Sandler. He's just on a commercial and the dog just like farts. It's like,
what's the Target's dog's name? Spot. Right.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was Ike, because the, what is it? Eisenhower had, I think, that same breed of dog, whatever it is.
Yeah. The
Spuds McKenzie dog. Yeah.
Spuds McKenzie dog, which I think is like it's a terrier of some sort. It's like a, hold on, let's look this up.
You ever see the,
it's a bull terrier.
Okay. I'm going to send you a video of one of these dogs that every single time I see it, because I think it gets reused and it's been like clipped for green screen. So it gets used in memes a lot. It makes me die laughing every time I watch it. Do it a live watch right now.
Okay, I'm watching it.
It's terrible radio, but the dog like just like runs up to, he's at the top of the stairs and he's just like looking around, he doesn't know what to do, he runs like all the way back, it's a running start, and just belly flops all the way down to the bottom of the stairs. And only the way a dog would. It's so funny. I love that so much.
I feel like if you like, if you're not cool, I feel like getting a bull terrier, a Spuds McKenzie dog, like instantly ups your cool factor.
That's a dog that's built for sunglasses, by the way.
That is the whole, you know, the whole bull gamut of dogs, the bulldog, the French bulldog, the bull terrier. Those are all the, you know, prime sunglass dogs.
Yeah. What was the one that would do the skate? It would skateboard. It was like a bulldog that would skateboard while wearing sunglasses.
I don't know if it wore sunglasses, but I know that like that was a very viral thing in like the internet 2.0 back in like 2003 or 2004.
Yeah,
I may be misremembering, but didn't Rob Dyrdek, is that how you say it?
Might have been Tosh.0.
Didn't he get a bulldog? Didn't he have a bulldog on a show that he was trying to get it to skateboard?
That sounds very, very believable. I would 100% believe that. Before we get too off topic, we should probably note some news. First news item up. They had a little Space Jam teaser. First look at Lola Bunny. Zendaya voicing her, obviously. And there's just something very off about this teaser. And I don't know if it's just the way that they mix the audio, or where they got the sample of it from, or like how they matched it up to the cartoon talking. But like, it just was very, very low quality. A very low quality clip. And it was, the reaction to it was overwhelmingly negative.
Well, it feels unnatural. It feels like when a local TV station tries to edit a clip of like a syndicated show to make it relevant to the local audience.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen something like that? Where
yeah,
it's just like they edit it or dub over it, and it's not the same thing. This feels like a clip from the movie that wasn't the dialogue. I don't know how to explain it. I'm with you, but I think Zendaya, I mean, I think the voice fits just fine. Like I'm not a big Lola Bunny guy. I don't really give a shit about like the conversations around Lola Bunny, which a lot of people, by a lot of people, is probably like two people online that were dunked on, quote tweeted to oblivion, didn't like the fact that they de-bimbo-fied Lola Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
I think the move here though is you just, like, it would be funny if Lola Bunny talked like a diner waitress from a 1980s movie. It was like, Bugs, yeah. Hey, Bugs, you want some coffee with that sugar?
That's what you want. You want like the aging 50-year-old like diner waitress that's giving you like a slice of apple pie or whatever.
Yeah, just a real gruff like you know, voice to basically offset everybody who's pissed off about the character.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of who would be a good get. Nick Nolte would probably be good. Nick Nolte as Lola Bunny would actually be like, what a twist. Like, oh, you guys are so pissed. Well, this is what you get. You get Nick Nolte voicing now Lola Bunny.
Yeah, I don't know. But it seemed fine, right? Like, it's like one of those things where everybody, you know, it goes back to, I've said it so many times about Space Jam, where we're just like, who fucking cares?
It's a teaser. It doesn't mean shit. So, like, it's not a huge deal in that regard at all. But again, the actual quality of the teaser was very bad. And I don't know what that is. If, like, they just couldn't get, like, Zendaya to, like, get the in a studio to do the recording, and she just, like, recorded it on voice memo or something. But, like, it just didn't. It sounded like there was, like, residual echo. Like, there was really weird tone to the actual way she was speaking. Like, I can't put my finger on it because I'm not an expert at this, but someone else probably can.
The funniest part of it was, like, the half-frame cut to Bugs Bunny in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Just be like, oh, she's talking to some. Because, like, the thing comes on the screen. It says Lola Bunny. Like, she's doing a speaking or a talking head sort of thing from a reality show. But then it cuts to Bugs. So it's like, is she having a conversation with Bugs?
Yeah.
Or is she talking to the audience? That now that I've had time to think about it, that's what I put the finger on in terms of it being weird. Is like, I don't know who is Lola Bunny talking to me, or is Lola Bunny talking to Bugs Bunny?
Yeah,
it's very
maybe
important.
That's it.
I need to know this.
Thank God they clarified it. We would have never figured it out. What we really need is now some sort of maybe a teaser with Elmer Fudd. Give us like one of the lower tier guys.
They just, yeah, they've, what about like Foghorn Leghorn? He's
the whole,
out. Right?
The whole project gets shut down.
Yeah.
Now I say I got something to say about this and immediately gets taken off the air.
I mean, there's a lot of negative connotations with the character, but like you could see like Matthew McConaughey doing that and then like that becoming super viral or like Foghorn mm-hmm. Leghorn just transitioned from, you know, Southern, heavy Southern, whatever you want to call it, to like Matthew McConaughey. I don't even know how to describe Matthew McConaughey. It's just Matthew McConaughey. And the first, like, you see Foghorn Leghorn pop up on screen and he's like, okay, we're going to play some basketball.
That's okay. Okay. Do. Okay.
You know, I'm just the atoms in the basketball, they represent a very small part of the universe.
You shoot lefty or righty, Foghorn. All right. And that would be that would absolutely make the trailer if McConaughey was casting this.
Who else is like, I mean, because like that's a weird thing about Lola Bunny, right? Is like, obviously you can't stunt cast. I don't want to say stunt cast because like Zendaya obviously is like super. It's just the same thing. It's the same thing with all other animated movies where they it's not stunt casting, but it's just getting a huge name to get attention on the movie, which is the point of casting for the most part. So it's not that they're doing anything different, but like with Bugs Bunny, you can't switch up Bugs Bunny's voice. And I would say like Lola Bunny is probably the only character you can do this for, right? Unless you have some famous actor who can replicate like Tweety Bird's voice or Sylvester the Cat's mm-hmm. voice. But like, You can't just go out and get Tom Holland to do Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny's got to sound like Bugs Bunny, but Lola Bunny doesn't have an established canon of voice, which kind of puts it in this weird area.
You can't like with a role like Bugs Bunny or like even like whatever Daffy Duck, like you can't, there's no space to make that character your own, you know? Like you can't do that, like you can't with Lola Bunny, that's definitely one you can go off and really just make your own thing out of it. Because like you're saying, there's I feel like there's no like, oh, that this is exactly what Lola Bunny sounds like. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't give a shit.
I doubt Zendaya is even thinking about it like that. She's no. just the only thing she's thinking about is cha-ching, cha-ching.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know what? Smart decision. Also, I want that new season of Euphoria. I like that show.
Me too. Like the specials that they did were pretty good.
Yeah, they're good. They were smaller in scale, which was, I think, the intended point. At least the first one was. Maybe the second one, too. But, like, I just to reiterate, it's more so the weirdness of the video, which feels very odd. Like, oddly edited. And we're talking so long about this because we don't have any news items. We just keep talking about Lola Bunny the entire episode. That's fine.
Speaking of Lola Bunny, there's Bugs. A Quiet Place spinoff in the roots.
Bugs, you want some syrup on your pancakes, Bugs?
Hey there, hon.
Okay, hon. Okay there, hon. Oh, handsome. Oh, you're so handsome, Bugs. Right on it. Over easy.
You want any carrots over easy? Just pan frying a carrot right on the griddle instead. Yeah, sorry. Griddle just, frying a carrot.
Just cracking a carrot open and having an egg yolk come out of the carrot.
Anyway, Quiet Place. There's a new spinoff coming out for it. It's not going to be like obviously this whole idea of a spinoff. It's not going to be Quiet Place Part 3. It's going to be based off of an idea from John Krasinski. So it's going to be a new group of characters fighting the same sound-based monsters. And is apparently going to be directed by director Jeff Nichols, who did Mud. Mud, I loved. He did Loving as well. Loving was pretty good. This is due right now. They set the date for it in 2023, mid-March. I like both Quiet Place movies, like we kind of talked about. So, I mean, anything they want to do with it, I think is fine because they're always going to make money off of that. But like I think we talked about a little bit with the last movie, it's kind of tough to see, like, where do you go from here? Well, retaining originality, right?
I don't know. One of the issues I have with it is I think by this point the monsters aren't interesting enough for me to care. Like they are a threat, but we've seen them get less scary just by virtue of one, learning how to beat them, and two, like it was like you were saying in the review last time where this one single monster terrorized this family for an entire 90-minute first movie. And then you get into the second one and they're just getting like mowed down. And so I don't find them particularly terrifying anymore the same way as I used to. And that's kind of tough to do, but again, it's just another story where you're doing the same thing. You find another family or collection of people and do it there. It's just weird because this universe, this Quiet Place universe, has really, like, for this to get two movies and then Quiet Place 3 and then this movie, right? Oh, no, if there will still be a Quiet Place 3.
So yeah, maybe there's not. Yeah.
So let's just say we get three movies. I mean, that's two more movies than I would have expected out of just the general conceit of the first one. I don't think it's a particularly good universe. I think they're fine movies and I think that works out fine. But like, that's the thing with spinning it off with like, they're good movies because of Emily Blunt, like the family and the actors and the actresses in this. And now you're just switching it over and you're kind of just this universe you've built. I don't find it appealing, but you know, may the right.
Yeah. It depends on which direction they're going to scale it kind of, because like, what do you do? Do you do more monsters now than you had in the second movie? Or do you go back to like the one monster sort of formula where like if the whole thing is going to be terrorized by one monster? I think their big challenge, or rather, I guess the best way for them to do it, right, is to like focus on making a new challenge, essentially. Like, you know how in the first movie, the whole thing was like Emily Blunt was having that kid. And like, that was like, how are we going to have a kid without making sound? So like in this one, they're going to have to think of some other scenario similar to that, where it's going to be them battling versus that scenario while trying to escape these monsters or stay undetected from them. So if they can have a cool concept for that, I'm all about them going out and branching off, doing new characters. But I do think, again, I'm a little bit less scared the more we learn about these monsters, again, because we got more exposition on them in the last movie. Like, you know, here they are falling in from space. Here we see more than one of them getting killed, not like easily, but like faster than the entire movie length. So like you need to find a way to keep them scary. And I think the best way to do that is to just, you know, really workshop a great scenario to keep the tension up, because that's the one thing both movies did very well, was just keeping tension up.
Okay, I got it. I got the idea that's going to get us there. It's going to get them there. So the movie builds tension for like 20 to 30 minutes before you see the monster the first time. And then you finally get a reveal of the monster and it's holding a gun. The monsters have learned how to use guns.
It's got a Tech 9 in both hands.
It's just a 9mm. It's not even like that intimidating of a gun compared to the size of the monster. But yet it's a monster with a gun nonetheless. So it is scarier. I think that's a good starting point.
I do. I agree. That would be a great way to do this. It's
just duct.
What's scarier than those monsters?
It's duct taped onto one of their legs, and they have no way to actually fire it. But it just turns out it's some guy who can like who doesn't get attacked by the monsters, who just started duct taping guns on the monsters, thinking he's like Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, there's gonna be, remember the
my creations, go forth, go forth.
The second Pacific Rim movie, when Charlie Day like started fucking the monsters or whatever, like this is like the version of that. Like this one guy is very, he doesn't have to be horny for the monsters, but he's getting guns for them.
Except he has no actual connection to the monsters. The monsters just think he's so pathetic they would feel bad if they like attacked the guy. And so the monsters, out of pity, allow the guy to just duct tape stuff on them, thinking that he's creating like cybernetically enhanced monsters.
Literally, what is the only thing scarier than those monsters? And it's a monster with a gun. Like that is, it's, you can't deny it's a worse version of that monster. It's way scarier. Imagine getting killed because you like ripped ass. Like, you know, like you do an unconscious rip ass in your sleep every now and then.
I mean, that's the part that really breaks down for me. Like, obviously, big suspension of disbelief for The Quiet Place Part One. Like, the big one, obviously, is having had a kid. I now realize there's no way to have a child and not get killed in that universe. It just is not happening. Like, the children are so loud, but I make so many noises. Like, I know they'd be careful and all that, but you have to, like, yell in your sleep. There's going to be times when you're going to just say something in your sleep or fart in your sleep. And when you start thinking about it outside of the movie universe, it becomes kind of a fun little thought experiment to think about how long you'd actually last in the Quiet Place universe. I think I can make it like 5 days.
I think that the key would be to find a way to make a muzzle that you would put on yourself while you sleep, and you put on kids at all times 24/7 until they're old enough to know not to speak. And that's like the only way to move forward. I can't figure out any other way to do it.
Man, I don't know what I would do. Like my first inclination for all these like horror movies or apocalyptic movies with monsters is like, I would try to go to a skyscraper right away and then just climb up the skyscraper. But I feel like that wouldn't work somehow. And I haven't completely figured out why. Like, one, the monsters could scale it, or like, two, you're up in a skyscraper with no food. That's why.
If you could be able to like lock down the skyscraper, I mean, not in this scenario with these monsters, because they could like climb pretty well from what I remember. So it wouldn't really work there. But like, you know, zombie apocalypse or whatever, I think skyscrapers kind of the way to go. If you can find a way to lock it down and get out without like just like breaking down all of your barricades, like through a sewer or whatever, I think that's the way to do it. And then you can go out and forage.
I Am Legend came close to how I'd want to handle the situation. I would not be able to do it because I have no knowledge of engineering to be able to like install metal, you know, blast doors on my apartment. But I feel like his setup was pretty good, aside from being very sad because he had no other human connection in his life and his dog died. Mm-hmm. But he had the old tapes. You just watch old episodes of Price is Right.
Yeah. And old episodes of Frasier, if I remember correctly. It might not be right, though. He seemed like a big Frasier guy, that doctor.
Yeah, he's a doctor. Frasier was a sitcom for doctors, man. It was the elitist sitcom.
Niles, this is your worst idea yet. Someone tagged us in that the speech by Beast, played by Kelsey Grammer in X-Men, where he did like the entire Henry VIII speech or whatever. We band of brothers.
Oh, Niles, this isn't the 78 Chateau Margaux. This is the 79. Oh, what do we do, Fraser? What do we do?
Dogs just barking like crazy. Before we get into the next news item, I'm going to talk a little bit about Mack Weldon. We talk about Mack Weldon all the time. It's the best, and you can kick off your summer in style. The band that's reinventing men's basics. That's right, Mack Weldon. It's so much more than just underwear. They have a full collection, including t-shirts, polos, button-ups, shorts, pants, swims, and so much more. With light and breathable fabric and technology, Mack Weldon keeps you cool and comfortable all summer long, like the Kid Rock song. From work to working out, happy hour to playing with your kids, Mack Weldon has men's essentials for whatever you need. I literally wear their stuff like nonstop. They have great shirts that like they don't, you know, like there's like good titty shirts and bad titty shirts. Mack Weldon shirts are good titty shirts. So like they don't have that weird like thing where they like hang concavely on your man boob. Like they hang very well. And I love that about them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you don't want to get those shadows underneath your man boobs.
No.
That's oof. It's like Affleck in that picture of him smoking with that sweater on.
Yeah.
Like now Affleck looks hot as shit, but that particular picture wasn't a good one.
No, he might probably because he's wearing Mack Weldon now. And again, great titty shirt. Bad titty shirt or shirt will ruin your summer. They are great titty shirts. Their shorts are amazing. I wear them like almost every week. Again, their whole line is great. You can dive into their swim line now with trunk and board short options that are quick to dry and have four-way stretch fabric. When you're not in the pool, Mack Weldon's Maverick Tech Chino Short and Radius Short are perfect additions to your summer wardrobe. They keep you comfortable so you can confidently power through most of your active days. They also have a free loyalty program called Weldon Blue. Level one gets you free shipping for life. Once you reach level two by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year. Stay cool this summer and look great doing it with a collection of men's essentials from Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, go to mackweldon.com/lights and enter promo code lights. That's mackweldon.com/lights, promo code lights for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics. Next item up, we have Cruella 2 is apparently in development with basically everyone returning. So that's cool, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. You know, like more of that, I guess.
I mean, it's not like a story where I'm like, damn, I needed so much more Cruella, but this it's another one where like you know how we talked about that, I think, with Enola Holmes, where I watched that movie and I was like, I would like to see another Enola Holmes movie. I didn't watch Cruella and think like, damn, I can't wait to watch a sequel. But I do think that there's, you know, people who want to get paid making this. I'm all for that.
Yeah. I mean, the first one was enjoyable enough that I think this next one could be enjoyable. It's not particularly exciting for me. I liked watching the first one, but I wasn't like watching. I was like, I need more of this. This is what I need more of. Mm-hmm. But they'll figure out some way to make it work and I'll watch it and I'm sure I'll like it and they'll just keep doing it into perpetuity. That's okay. I do think Disney, like, I'd rather see this than them try to do another John Carter of Mars. Like 10 years ago, that was their strategy. It was like, we're going to make $200 million moonshot movies. And now they figured it out. It's like, hey, you know the stuff people already like? Let's just keep doing that. And yeah, I don't want to get into the thing we always like get into with it, but it's also like unsurprising, right? You kind of knew like when it came out and it was getting like 70% reviews or whatever is getting that. That's just like, they're going to do Cruella again. It will be interesting to see. We'll be interesting to see like what metrics Disney sees that like helps them decide like in this past environment, like whether something, I mean, obviously like, who purchased or how many people purchased the $29.99 like exclusive access pass is a huge one. I'd love to see the comparisons if they exist. I don't know if they would release them or if you get it from an earnings call or whatever between something like Cruella and something like Mulan or any other big name that came on that Raya, anything else that came on that exclusive access. Cause I just like, I would just, I, you know, well, I mean, what would you think? Like, I think it would do a lot more than Mulan and probably did a little bit better than Raya, I'm guessing. But it is also something that, like, it wouldn't shock me if it did a lot better just because it was Emma Stone.
Yeah, it had star power and it hit at a good time where there was, like, I think everyone's starting to go back to the movie theaters. I think this last weekend was, like, very big just for horror in general because Conjuring, I think, cleaned up. And so did obviously Quiet Place Part Two. So, but Cruella, I think, is doing solid as well. And that's cool. Now, I mean, I think if they're going to make sequels for stuff like Lion King, like they're making Lion King 2, or if they're going to make, they have the Prince Anders series coming out for Aladdin, like if those movies can get sequels, I think Cruella is definitely online for a sequel, you know? Just don't make a Dumbo sequel. I think we're done there.
It makes sense. Yeah. So it's made $87 million at the box office, which.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good.
It's a lot higher than I thought it would have done, but you people are going back. I think we're at the point where people are ready to go back to the movies. So what do you think? Like, what do you think? I don't know, I'm trying to say like how many people you think would order it on Disney Plus at $29.99, how much money they made there, but it's kind of impossible to really guess that out.
Mm-hmm. The next news item up is that we're going to get a Master and Commander prequel movie after however many years it's been, probably since like the first one came out in 2003. So it's not going to have, obviously, Russell Crowe, Paul Bettany, or any of the returning cast. It's going to be directed by Patrick Ness is the guy who did Chaos Walking. So natural marriage there, right? The Chaos Walking guy and Master and Commander prequel.
Yeah, in this one, the men of the Master and Commander universe, their thoughts can be seen by all people. Wasn't that the affliction in Chaos Walking?
Yeah, men's thoughts could always be seen by everybody, but women's couldn't.
Yeah, so now it's just like a bunch of dudes sailing around in a ship. It's just like all you're hearing is like, "Arr, I'm horny, mate."
Are there even pirates?
No, I know. Yarr. I got scurvy. I need some fruit and vegetables.
It's just the worst dialogue. Shiving me timbers, matey. It's like they didn't even try. The
internal monologue of pirates. It's just the same thing they say.
Thinking of getting me some booty. Arr.
I never got me a peg leg. A yarr.
They say R in every sentence. Oh yep, my God.
That's the internal monologue. That's exactly what happens. This is weird. I like Master and Commander a lot. I'm just so disappointed Russell Crowe's not back. When I think of Master and Commander, I think of Russell Crowe. And that's obviously it's been 20 years. But man, I mean, you can't.
It's a prequel too, so it's not possible. Yeah.
Right. Like, so you can't do it, but I don't know. I mean, I do like the period or whatever you want to call it, like historical naval drama or period naval drama or whatever it's called. Like, we always talk about the Victorian setting being like, I hate that, like when it's set in a city, but like when it's on the seas in that era of time, I like it a lot. That's when it seemed like the seas were the most exciting, when the seas were popping back in the day.
Yeah, no, I agree. Movies. And I love that movie. That's one of my all time favorite dad movies. Like, my dad loved that movie, and I think he passed it on to me because, like, I love that bromance between Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany in that movie, like the lesser of two weevils and the whole scene on the Galapagos. And like, just there's so many great, I think, elements to that movie that I don't know if you can now, after all this time, replicate and make work. But I mean, I think now that Pirates of the Caribbean's like essentially not like dead, but like that has gone down. We need a sailing movie. You know, we need another sailing movie to come out. Maybe this is it.
Yeah. I'm going to amend my statement by also saying lots of very evil things also happening on the seas as well. But I think it's just from a movie standpoint, when, you know, your brain just has a big ship with sails on it firing cannons. I want more of that.
Just internal monologue, except it's the guy doing the Joker scene. Arg, I'm about to become the Flying Dutchman. Arg.
Just like Turbo Teen, a guy just transforming into a ship, and his ass transforms first to form like the sailors.
I would love it. But yeah, that's basically it for news. Very slow news week. I think we had way more last week, so if that's any consolation. Before we get into our next ad, or into our next section, which will be our review of The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, which was on HBO Max and also in theaters, which, by the way, we're going to talk about this a little bit in the review, but that is a movie that you definitely should have watched in theaters, because I think horror, more than almost any other genre, just doesn't translate the same over... like your, again, crusty MacBook Pro versus in a main theater. But yeah, before we do that, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about BetterHelp. BetterHelp at Barstool Sports, we truly love and appreciate our listeners, as you guys know. Without you, none of us would be able to do what we do every day. So once in a while, we try to bring you something good, and maybe it's for you, maybe it's not. It's totally okay. And I think a lot of us, we take care of our bodies, but it was a tough year. And for a lot of us, we should start thinking about taking care of our minds. And obviously there's a stigma and sometimes a misunderstanding about what therapy is. And it can be really whatever you want it to be. It doesn't need to be sitting around talking about your feelings. You know, We've had people, I think whenever we talk about like anything mental health wise, we do get like a lot of very, I think, super positive response from listeners just saying like, it's good to feel seen. It's good to feel like just know not alone, know like other people are doing this and that, like, it's just not like just less of a stigma around it. So, I mean, again, that's why I like that we do these ads with BetterHelp. You know, a lot of people battle with temper. If stress is too much to manage, if you have depression, anxiety, PTSD, there's like an endless list. Therapy can just, it's a tool that can help make your life easier. And they're a great place. They have customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with the therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. And it's more affordable than in-person therapy. And you can start communicating with the therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people to see what therapy is really all about. You have a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and our listeners get 10% off the first month of BetterHelp. BetterHelp.com/lights. That's BetterHelp.com/lights. Okay, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Do a quick synopsis for those of you that maybe didn't know it or didn't watch it, and they're still listening for some reason. Paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren take on one of the most sensational cases of their career after a cop stumbles upon a dazed and bloodied young man walking down the road. Accused of murder, the suspect claims demonic possession as his defense, forcing the Warrens into a supernatural inquiry unlike anything they have ever seen before. As Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson, it's directed by Michael Chavs, who did Curse of La Llorona. So The Conjuring, obviously, or Devil Made Me Do It, obviously part of the Conjuring universe. This is like their eighth film in this universe, which is crazy to think about. They always, I feel like, make a very decent amount of money, just like Insidious, which is also Patrick Wilson. What did you think of Conjuring Trill?
This is a franchise that has always been uplifted by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. I think they had to do a heavier lifting in this movie, or at least seemed to do it, because it was honestly, it was weaker than the Conjuring 1 and Conjuring 2. Part of me even feels like they just didn't even name it Conjuring 3, just in case like James Wan came back. But it was fine. The weird thing about it was, and this is what caught me off guard, is like we watched the trailer and even the opening of the movie. Let's talk about that. Like, that was really cool, right? There was a whole like that. I'm a sucker for like a good exorcism scene.
Yeah.
Just cause I think those are fun to watch. I mean, they have the right mix of like gore, or whatever you want to call it, and creepiness and theatrics that you want out of a movie. But then you get into the whole trial aspect of that. And I thought the whole movie was going to be like somewhat based around the trial, and the whole trial thing like came up, and then it never even gets touched again to the last 5 minutes of the movie. And it's like, okay, by the way, this guy was convicted, which is based off of a true story. Like, just like Conjuring. Well, okay. They took a true story as a light framework for this movie and then made stuff happen around it, just in the same Conjuring 1 and Conjuring 2. So you knew what happened to the guy, but I just thought it was weird from a marketing standpoint, or at least what I knew. I didn't expect to get all this like other movie in there. I thought it was going to be mostly around like the trial aspect of which would be a little bit different, but they went down a whole new rabbit hole with like another murder and finding out this witch or whatever you want to call her, a cultist or whatever, and then solving that aspect of it. But I thought like the way it started and then the way the movie actually went and then the way the movie wrapped up wasn't really cohesive.
I understand that. I think that it's probably the best Conjuring movie since The Conjuring 2. So I rated this movie 57, and that puts it below Conjuring 2, which I gave 63, and The Conjuring, the original, which I gave an 83. Before that, you know, The Nun, Annabelle Comes Home, Annabelle Creation, Annabelle. Yeah, but those Annabelles here, folks.
Those don't really even count, though, right?
They are part of the Conjuring universe, technically speaking. That's all.
They are like, but they're like the Scion to the Conjuring's Toyota. Like the mainline ones are the Toyotas, and then these ones are just kind of a given that these are just like value movies.
So I think there's some things the movie did right. Mostly being, I think like a lot of the stuff you were talking about, especially like that opening sequence with the exorcism, like the I think the portioning of like gore and jump scares and anxiety inducing stuff, I think that was good. I agree with you in that, like, I really did think that the whole like idea of this movie was to be like, hey, this is the first time demonic possession was used in a court. This is like how they were able to defend it or use it or whatever. But it really just, it didn't have almost anything to do with that trial at all. It was all about, I feel, the investigation by them into proving the demonic possession. And I think some of it was cool, especially the like the almost Rey and Kylo Ren, you know, force zapping into each other thing that Lorraine Warren and the cultist did. I think that the makeup of the cultist was really good. Like, you know, how she was wearing like those that very cult, like almost like a cultist outfit, if that makes sense. And she had like the high heels that did the big clack every time she walked.
Yeah, it was like it was a Sith outfit.
Yeah, it was a big time Sith outfit. And she also had like those like hands that are just scary as shit, like you know, they did like the long nails and like the creepy formations they would make when she was like doing the spell on the pentagram or whatever. That was great. I think John Noble, who a lot of people I think recognize as a Denethor from Lord of the Rings, was cool in this as like the former priest guy or whatever. Not like a lot of crazy twists or turns or anything, right? Though
no, it's and to go back to your point, is like in even like what I said about the murder trial, it's like even if they would have went through it with that and made that the focus of the movie, I think it would have been a worse movie, because like what do you even do there? Like you're just gonna have like Ed and Lorraine testifying. It's like, no, we want to see Ed and Lorraine. First off, like they respect each other for the king and queen that they are. So their love is paramount to us in the Conjuring universe, and it's why we like these characters. But second off, like we want to see them get into some shit, like going over a cliff and being pulled down by a demon and then getting saved by Ed, who previously was recovering from a heart attack, but muscled up enough strength to do that. Yeah, I mean, there's some cool stuff in here. It was just one of those things where it felt... No, it felt like it went a little more into the like unbelievable realm than the previous Conjuring 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. What, like just getting into the cultist and getting in, because I know they did demons and all that stuff. Like, it's just like, I don't know how to explain it. It just seemed kind of messy, and it didn't really seem centered in a way that necessarily is. Like I said, it wasn't really focused. But the John Noble character was funny because he was basically the old farmer from South Park, like in the Pet Cemetery episode, where he's like, "Don't go up in the," he's like, "Don't go up in those hills. We've had some zombies come back," and he did that function. But he was still an interesting character, because the second you saw him, you're like, "This dude's got something going on. Like something's up with this guy."
I love his teeth. The way his teeth just look whenever he would like talk, because he's like a big like protruding teeth guy. It is very creepy vibe to him, and I love that from. But I saw someone tweet before. It's kind of funny how like Ed and Lorraine Warren, who by most respects are like terrible people, like just con artists in real life, have become like one of Hollywood or just in movies most successful married couples.
Yes, well, the whole Conjuring thing is you basically have to take Ed and Lorraine for their word. To have it like have any believability in the film universe. And then there's almost no examination, because that would put the entire concept on its tilt. But you're right, like there's a big disconnect between the criticism of the real life Ed and Lorraine Warren, who probably long departed, right? Or Lorraine died.
I believe both of them passed away.
Yeah. And the Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, because I mean that's just how the movie works. Mm-hmm. I did like scenes, you know, like obviously the opening one was, you know, gets you into the movie, right? Just start it off, just pull the ripcord and get that engine started.
And get a scary kid too, which always helps.
Yeah, you know, you get the scary kid, and there were like a few jump scares in this movie, right? Like, but you knew they were going to happen, like more so than any other jump scare. Like, they weren't surprise jump scares. Like the first one was probably the kid running out and stabbing his dad or whoever in the leg. because you knew that you knew that was going to happen. But I thought the murder, like the initial murder, I guess, with the Arnie character, and this one, he was the dog kennel guy, right? In this one, but he was his landlord in real life. Or maybe it was even his landlord in this
one. I think it was his landlord in the movie, yeah.
Okay. Maybe I blocked that one out. I just remember the news clip was like, shocking news here. Does all the exposition for you in a news clip.
Beloved kennel owner, which, by the way, this movie makes being a kennel owner seem like the worst thing in the entire world. Just this dog scream barking, and they're just sitting there just like in the middle of their living room. It's all you could hear. Like, why would you have an in-house kennel? Why would that not be off property, like off your where you live?
That's a good question. But I thought that murder scene like was kind of creepy. They did the whole Get Out thing with the song. I forget what song was playing. Was it Call Me by Blondie? Or no, it was it was a rock and roll song. It was wasn't Call Me. What was Call Me in? Call Me was in a Cruella, wasn't it? I don't know why I was thinking of that.
I don't remember.
But they did the whole thing where they were playing the song on those speakers, and then the murder happens, and then the song gets creepy. They did the I Got Five on It thing, made that song creepier. I thought that scene like worked really well, because that was particularly creepy. And then so you like had the mix between the demonic possession scenes, and then the rest of the creepiness came in the occultist and the witch character with the rest of the movie. And the way that like all tied in together was kind of funny, because you thought like, I at least thought like, oh, they got all this work to do to like track this evil lady down, and she just happens to like be in tunnels beneath her dad's house. It's like, oh, yeah. she's right here. You got to get the altar, but oh, it's got to be beneath my house.
I like them figuring that out. I think a couple of scenes that stood out to me as far as like making me more scared. And I want to note, like, so I went to the screener for this. And it was made it particularly more scary because we were the only ones there. So it was me and I was just standing there in the middle of the theater, nobody else there at all, pitch black. And like when you're in a theater, I think a horror movie, obviously just it hits so much harder because like you don't have control over your environment at all. And just I think it made the movie significantly better than maybe if I had watched it on HBO Max or anything like that.
Seeing like you're right, even though nobody was there, I think seeing a horror movie in a theater with other people adds to just the general experience.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a laugh track on a TV show. It's like if you know what you're supposed to be scared at or get a reaction at, it's kind of like more of an entertaining overall experience than simply just watching it on HBO Max.
Agreed. But in that experience, I think some of the scenes that stood out to me as being very scary. The scene where she's like crawling underneath the house foundation looking for like what did the curse, and like the totems or whatever you want to call them, I thought were very creepy. They reminded me of Blair Witch Project. And like when the kid gets cursed and he's like jumping on the waterbed, you know, I found that part very like just off-putting. You know what I mean?
The waterbed was funny because I made me realize how long it's been since I've even thought about the concept of a waterbed. But you knew what was coming in that scene, but at the same time, it was like super enjoyable because you wanted to see like how it was executed. And the funny thing is like all waterbeds are cursed just by virtue of being waterbeds. That one just more so than others. But when she was crawling around underneath the house, the thing that really creeped me out was all those rats.
Yeah.
That was a high rat count. They had a problem. There was a problem there. That was a New York, sewer urban legend rat count there, where you fall in the grate and then land in the rat pit.
Yep, that was a one too many rats for me as well. There's I feel like a couple other ones. The scene where they're in the morgue. The scene where they're in the morgue contacting the person like with the bloated dead corpse, and like the guy like gets up and attacks them. I thought that scene was very scary, especially because like they're flicking the lights on and off and all of that stuff. I liked when, and this is where they played very smart to the dynamic of Ed and Lorraine Warren, this where they corrupt Ed and make him attack Lorraine. Did I call Lauren before? Ed and Lorraine. But they make Ed attack Lorraine, and I thought that was good.
It's Lorne Michaels. Yeah.
I'm possessed.
I'm possessed. You just do a Dr. Evil impersonation. Do Lorne Michaels. Even that was so shitty. I'm not going to riff on that. The morgue thing was cool because I like that big bloated zombie. It reminded me of The Last of Us 2 or a big early Resident Evil, like a video game zombie. I think it got a little, it tickled my fascination a little bit, I think. They get the end of the movie, obviously. You know, she finds out, like she goes to see John Noble's character, his name's Kastner. She goes find out, and he kind of says, well, you know, I got a little more information for you. Turns out it's like my daughter and I was a priest and I got kicked out because, you know, I had sex, kicked me out, had the daughter. And then that kind of ends with like what you're saying, but it kind of comes to like a head with like a really cool scene where, you know, he has a sledgehammer, right? And he takes the sledgehammer and you get this like really cool, like maybe over dramatic shot of him bringing like what you think is bringing the sledgehammer down on Lorraine, but it actually he brings it down on the altar and breaks it. And it made me think of Zack Snyder for some reason, that whole thing where he's bringing it down and it kind of cuts. Like, I don't know if it was slow-mo. I think it was slow-mo. And he's like, you just get this great look on his face and he's just breaking this altar. And then the cultist character comes out and they're like, yeah, we broke the curse. And then as soon as they say that, like she starts twisting and turning, which I thought was like a cool way to like vanquish an enemy. Like that seemed fitting of the movie. I had no problem with the way that ended. I think it was a little neat. I don't know. The problem is when you go from that and then you immediately go back at the end of the movie with the Arnie character and you're like, now you're doing the courthouse thing again. And then like, you don't actually see like any conviction. It's just the text over. And it's like, Arnie was sentenced to manslaughter, convicted to manslaughter, sentences, maybe like 10 to 20, he only served 5 years and then married Debbie, which is what happened in real life. I thought that was a little anticlimactic. Wasn't anticlimactic for the actual cultist character, but I thought it was anticlimactic for that whole thread of the trial moving throughout the movie, especially since the subtitle of this movie is The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yeah, I think maybe that was part of the issues I had with this as well. It's just that like there was definitely a big divided focus between like the Ed and Lorraine fighting the cultist while the Ed character is like essentially being possessed and like about to like kill himself in that ward of the hospital or whatever. And like that, the entire time we're watching that, we're like, okay, well, we know he's not going to kill himself and he's just like doing the levitation thing. I cared so much more about what was happening in those catacombs. And I think maybe if there was more of a split focus or something, or a better split of the focus, it might've been a little bit better because I didn't care too much for Arnie's part of the story. Once we realized like that he was not going to be such a big focus, right? Like the trial wasn't going to be a big deal. I cared more about Ed and Lorraine.
Yeah, you didn't give a shit. I mean, that's by design. Like part of me just feels like, you know, they needed a hook for this movie. This movie needed something different, needed a little bit of some pizzazz over the previous mainline Toyota Conjuring movies. And they just pulled that, you know, the Devil Made Me Do It trial thing that they were involved with as a way to market the movie. But like I said before, you can't really make a good movie off of that unless like 60 minutes is just Lorraine giving a deposition on like how to give someone an exorcism good. And so I kind of get why they did it, but like it just like for them, them going back trying to wrap up the movie with that, like you didn't give a shit at that point. It's like Arnie, mm-hmm. I don't care. Like I don't want to go back to this guy.
Yeah. I stopped caring about him too. I do think though, like you were saying, that one of my favorite lines, I think, from the movie was when she got possessed, the cultist got possessed, and Ed said something along the lines of like, you promised the devil a soul, now he's gonna take it. And then she just got crunched. And like you see like her, like they made the legs bend in the most like disgusting way, where like the knee, the leg goes backwards at the knee, and like you just hear that big bone crunch, and it's just ugh. Good sound design on this.
There was a funny line of dialogue that was a joke that fell flat. I thought it was kind of stupid, I guess, was when they went into Kastner's chamber of horrors and all of his artifacts and books and whatnot. And Ed was like, you don't happen to file these by Dewey Decimal, do you?
Yes.
And Kastner didn't even riff with him. He was just like, no.
Yeah.
It was just like that. That was like a line delivered. I don't know. It was like obviously trying to like put a little humor into this movie where there is none, or trying to, I guess, like convey some sense of discomfort on Ed's part with like what he's walking into. But then like the Kastner character is he's the South Park farmer guy. Like he has no humor whatsoever, and he just was like, no. And that was the end of that thing, which I mean maybe it worked because it was kind of a funny interaction, but like just imagine like seeing some books and asking anybody, do you keep these by Dewey Decimal System? And they'd be like, no, who does that? Well, only libraries. I don't do that here.
But yeah, I think the one thing we can agree on is that it's better than a lot of the other Conjuring Universe movies. And maybe that's just by virtue of having Ed and Lorraine in it full time, but not as good as the original Conjuring or Conjuring 2, in my opinion. But yeah, I gave it a 57. What did you give it?
I give it a 60. I'm really close to you. I thought James Wan's involvement in these, I think, are pretty paramount to the overall enjoyability. And they're not... Conjuring 1, Conjuring 2 aren't fantastic, but I do think he brings his own touch, and he kind of knows what he wants it to be. And while this one I think was enjoyable, it didn't feel the same. But you're right, it is miles beyond the Kirkland brand Conjuring movies, the curse and The Nun and all those guys. So, and you know, at this point they can make anything with the Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga characters and just turn it into a Conjuring movie. It'd probably be like, okay, but it didn't slap the same.
I was going to say this. I don't appreciate the Kirkland Ricochet shot. I love Kirkland products. You ever have, I had Kirkland brand pesto. It is incredible.
Okay. Let me amend that. Nice brand with an exclamation mark. Cause yeah, Kirkland brand stuff. Kirkland brand's the ultimate thing that you get, and then your dad comes over and it's like, that's just Grey Goose, that's a really good product. They're just putting it in the Kirkland bottle. You're actually a smart shopper.
You're getting at a much better rate per ounce. And it's a bona fide fact.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but the James Wan thing's funny because we actually had the same point about Saw, right? Like the original Saw and James Wan and his involvement in the franchise. And you know, I don't know. Like, maybe he's just got a magic touch that makes these movies better. I'm not saying they're fantastic movies, but I do think he brings something that I cannot describe to, like, at least with the original Saw. Like, part of it's just based on the fact that it's been 20 years. But with Conjuring, I think you can definitively say that these movies are better. You know, he obviously, being on the director's chair, they're better products with him in it. Or directing them.
Agreed. Again, better than the some of those other not Kirkland but nice brand product Annabelle and non-Conjuring movies, but not as good as the original. Let's move on. We're going to do our best jerseys draft. So like I mentioned before, we're having a czar instead of an audience vote this time, and your first audience czar is Cole Smith is your first audience czar. He gave me a pretty decent list. Some of them I don't know, but I think Trill will probably know. But we'll get right into it. Let you know right now that Trill, I did the randomizer right before we got into the section. Trill, you're first, then me, then the audience, then loop back. Is that the same order as last time? Damn.
Yeah. Okay. So this is so tough because it's like you can take the cliche picks. Like they're uniforms I really like. Like the New York Yankees uniform. Not a big Yankees fan, but I do think the uniforms they wear look good in a baseball environment. But my favorite uniform of all time is the Kelly Green Philadelphia Eagles uniform, and I got to take that.
Green Eagles.
You know, am I wasting a 1-1 pick on that? Maybe. But I'd be willing to bet that my favorite uniforms aren't – I don't think they're the group favorite uniforms, but they're just – there's something. I mean, who's the first Eagle you think of when you think of the Kelly Green?
Seven. All seven. He went to the high school next to me. Oh my God.
Michael Vick?
Oh my God. No. Boomer.
Randall. Oh. Yeah. I was going to say Randall Cunningham.
Well, I know Boomer, I guess, better just because that's all people would fucking talk about.
But I was going to say 12, man. They should bring back the Kelly Green uniforms, but they should do it with the NFL 75th anniversary patch on it, which I think happened in like 1995. And just keep that patch on there permanently.
Was Boomer not on the Eagles? Am I going crazy? He wasn't. You're thinking
of the Jets, probably.
I think you're right. Yeah. Same sort of shade of green. I don't know.
Well, see,
I
didn't really even correct you just because I didn't know for sure. So yeah. It's not that big.
Someone was fucking screaming.
But if they listen to this podcast long enough, they know we're morons.
Yeah, they know we're very stupid.
We know we're stupid, dude.
Hey, dude, green is green. Green is green is green. Okay, so I'm up, and can you take a guess what my pick is?
It's the rumbling, bumbling, the powder blues of the Superchargers of San Diego.
It's easy. It's so easy for me, obviously, not just as a Chargers fan, but it's objectively one of the best uniforms in all of major sports. And I think that's just, it's a straight up fact. The audience, Cole Smith, Chargers powder blue was his number one pick. He obviously doesn't get it. He does get, however, what I think is a great jersey, but I'm not sure how audience is going to feel about this. Brazil soccer, their home jersey, the yellows. I like this pick. You know what I'm talking about? The pure yellows.
I mean, what are, like, if you were to say, like, tie in a uniform with a national team, the Brazil would probably be, like, maybe the Netherlands, but...
Netherlands orange, yeah.
Yeah, like, but Brazil, I mean, just because of the success they've achieved, I would have to say that's fair.
I know. I think it's a great pick. I think people are going to be upset at where it was taken, but that's just the order it was given to me in. His next pick is the Astros orange, yellow, and red stripe from the 70s to 80s, which are another – that's an amazing, amazing jersey. Maybe one of the best in all of baseball history.
I remember distinctly people shitting on that jersey in the early 2000s, and this is back when the Astros had, like, the red hat with the ugly red script and the ugly star.
Yep.
It's like something about listening to Disturbed and Trapped just had rotten all of our brains to not even think properly about uniform design. But I not only think this looks good, it represents a era of style for me, like, right with the 70s and it just being like a non button up single piece uniform or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And that the stripes, I'm trying to think of, like, actually, like, what's the first player that comes to mind? The only one I can think of is Nolan Ryan, maybe, but
don't put me on the spot again. I'll end up saying like Kevin Youkilis or something.
Chuck Knobloch.
Oh, fuck. Fucking Chuck Knobloch. Okay, so I'm back up. My second pick, I'm going to stay in the AFC West. I'm going to pick the Raiders all blacks. The Raiders black jersey is one of the best jerseys also, I think, in maybe not all sports, but it's one of the best jerseys in football. I think it's so iconic. I love it so much, as much as I despise the Raiders and all Raiders fans. It's an amazing look. So simple and just very intimidating at times. Not always, not with Derek Carr, but with some other players for sure. So Trill, you're back up.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to get there's a few picks I want to take. I mean, there's a hockey one I really like, but I'm not the biggest hockey fan. But I really like it, so I'm going to take it. I got to stay true to myself because I feel like I'm being not genuine if I took a hockey jersey, right? So let me.
I don't think that would be ungenuine. There's hockey jerseys I like despite not being a huge hockey fan.
Yeah, I like the Montreal Canadiens. I'm going to take that. I like to me as a non-hockey fan, that's the quintessential hockey look for me, where you have the sweater, right? I'm going to say it right.
Yeah.
You have the sweater, which has the stripe with, you know, the outlines on the chest, and you have the logo. Then you have the contrasting pants, or there's probably a hockey word, shorts. I don't know what to call them. And then you have the socks, which are then again, red. Like it looks so good.
It's a very clean jersey. This is very surprised by your first two picks so far, but you have a back-to-back here. So you get one more.
I want to go college basketball, and I think when you think of college basketball uniforms, for me, it's probably UCLA.
Which, do you have like an era you prefer here?
It's not like so much an era of specific jersey design. Like, obviously, I think college basketball uniforms looked a lot better like in the 80s and the 70s when they weren't like, you know, they had a smaller, what do you call them? Like, I mean, you know, the straps that go on the shoulders, like, what do you call those? If it's a one piece. I mean, you want to say it's sleeves, but there's no sleeves. It's just like, you know how those have gotten bigger over the years?
Yeah.
So it's not like really specific. I think their current iterations look I think they look pretty good. Like, I think they're Jordan brand now, right? But it's something, I think the blue, like blue and gold go together very well. And then I think it's just the UCLA that it's like the perfect amount of lettering that looks good on the front of a jersey.
I agree. They're great, great, great jerseys.
Like, I like Kentucky. So, I like Kentucky's uniform, but I think like Kentucky's harder. Like, UCLA is just so short, you can make it bigger, and it's just there.
And they're a slightly lighter blue, and the gold, I think, just does make that so much better. But that might be again biased because of the Chargers' part of powder blue. So I don't know.
I think UCLA, like even back like when Kareem was there, like even the UCLA script is very nice.
Mm-hmm.
If you see one of those, like they have not only a good non-script font but a good script font, so that's probably my favorite college jersey.
Yeah. No, I like that pick. I'm going to pick the 90s purple Suns jerseys, the shooting star or shooting sun, I guess. And well, the sun's a star, the shooting star jersey with purple. The Barkley ones were so sick, and I can't let them get off the board. And I know they're probably going to be up eventually, either from you or from Cole Smith. So I'm going to keep them. I'm going to keep my purple Suns jerseys. Go Suns. Destroy the fucking Nuggets. All right, Cole. Cole's up, and Cole is picking the purple Raptors jersey with the Raptor on it. I think that was a good clarification. But I do think that jersey is very cool.
Yeah, I love that jersey.
Yeah, that one had to go off the board. His next pick, though, is a very funny one, and I don't know if you've seen these before, but the 1994 USA soccer.
Oh, sorry.
1994 USA soccer team denim jerseys. Do you remember these?
No. Well, hold on.
Okay, so just look it up. Look up 1994 USA soccer team denim jerseys. They're very funny. They're like, essentially like the old 90s style, like stars and stripes that we put on like all of our Olympic shit. But then like just the base design of the whole jersey is denim. It's just like, oh, it's God. A denim wash.
Yeah. I like it. I'm fine. I like it. It's a look.
That's all you got to say about that.
Well, the thing is like, is it actual denim?
I don't believe it's, so. I think it was just a design. I don't think you can wear denim while you're playing soccer or denim shirt.
Yeah, but that would make it a lot cooler. Maybe it is. It's like faux denim. It definitely has a denim pattern where it's like speckled white and blue, like a you know, denim wear on weave or whatever you want to call it. I remember these existing, but now, like, I don't think I've ever thought about them as denim before, but now it's the only thing I can see.
Yep. Okay, so after the USA soccer denim team, which again, I think that's a fantastic pick, I'm up and I'm going to pick the teal Pistons jerseys. I just think they look cool. There's nothing I can do about it. I don't know if it's cliche or whatever. I think they're just an awesome jersey, and I think they should definitely, that's a such an easy win for the Pistons to go back to that. Hit that well, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're back up now, and you have back-to-backs to round yourself out.
Okay. I'm going to take the, like, 94 Larry Johnson Charlotte Hornets teal with the pinstripes look.
I love that. I love that.
It's a teal. Fantastic, fantastic jersey.
I love that pick. That's so great.
Well, and like, also, we were talking about the throwback. Like wearing a throwback jersey to a music festival, it's probably played out, but I don't think you can go wrong with an LJ throwback at a music festival. That feels almost just like wearing a white button-down shirt to the office.
They if you ever have time, look up on eBay just the retro Charlotte Hornets gear, like their old like starter jackets and stuff shit. Like they're the coolest things you'll ever see. Like I would buy, if they weren't so expensive because they know the demand's high, I would have bought so many of those by now because their starter jackets are, oh, they're so cool. You know what I'm talking about? The old blues?
Yes. You know what? You know, I'm going to have to double dip on that Montreal pick for my last pick. I think the Montreal Expos jersey, both the road uniform and their home uniform with the pinstripes, like Marquise Grissom era, was that was some of the best jersey making in baseball ever. And their hat, which had the, like, it was like MLB, but it was like French Canadian for like Montreal Les Expos, or maybe it wasn't a B, maybe it was. It was like Les Expos Baseball or whatever it was. Like that was, that was a pretty cool logo as well.
I like that. That's a good double dip into the Canadian. I didn't expect out of almost any of your picks for you to have two Canadian picks on here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Expos also had, they also had the, like the non pinstripe jersey with like the logo and then the number on the other side. But I like that. Like even like the Vlad Guerrero, like pinstripe Expo jersey. I don't like, I mean, it's a shame. I think the Nationals jerseys have gotten better. That first, like, I still see the Walgreens logo whenever I see that W. It's a shame we had to get rid of one of the best logos and uniform sets in baseball. And with the blue and red, like, which is very similar to the Canadians, it's colors that work.
Yeah. Great pick, Phil. I'm back up and let's see, what do I have left? I know what I'm taking. I'm taking the Nigeria 2018 World Cup jerseys. You know what they are, right?
Yeah, didn't they sell out because they were so fire?
They're so cool. Like the green sort of like, it's not mosaic, it's not the right word, but like, it's like the highlighter green on white. And it was like a almost crystalline design. It was, oh, they were so
it was
cool.
Like, it was like chevrons almost or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like diamond shapes. They were really, really cool. I loved those jerseys, man. Those are some of the coolest soccer jerseys I had ever seen. And I have a bunch of like, just did barely off the list picks, but we'll talk about those in a bit. The last pick, and I don't know this one. I didn't look it up before I even saw it on his list. So Cole Smith, the last pick of the draft and the last pick for the audience, he picked the Texas all-white football, parentheses, Stormtroopers, specifically worn by wide receiver Roy Williams in the early 2000s. Does that ring a bell to you?
Yeah.
Again, I don't watch college football, so that'll be all you.
I mean, unless it was like a different uniform, it's like Texas white on white, right?
I believe so.
If it's just Texas white on white, like I think that's a really good look. I'm trying to remember if they did, you know, when they used to do like any of the pro combat, like special one-off uniforms. They always had, like Nike always had their slated teams that did it. But I think that was after the player
Williams for sure.
Yeah, I think it was after his specific time at Texas.
Yeah, I do like the. I just looked them up, and they are very, very nice. I mean, I know these jerseys now that I see them, obviously, but like they are very nice jerseys. So I think all around a pretty good draft for them. No,
I liked when the Texas font was bigger on the jerseys,
mm-hmm.
and they like. I also liked when the Kansas. Do you remember the early 2000s, like? KU basketball jerseys had that like specific font on there that was like had some stylization. I almost say like it looked Western.
Couldn't say for sure. It's definitely not watching college basketball around then.
I just throwing that out there in case any audience.
Really, that's for the audience.
Audience members like listening, and they're like, "Yeah, I remember that shit."
Let's go through some honorable mentions that didn't make the list. For me, I had the 90s Nuggets. I always thought was really cool. 90s Rockets. I had some of the other picks that Cole had, retro Astros included. The green Oakland ones were awesome. The early 2000s Diamondbacks, the 90s Magic with the blue pinstripe. Netherlands orange, which we had talked about before, the old Inter jerseys. Juve was, I think, on some of the other people that had DM me listed on their list. Cole had the 2016 France World Cup, white Dodgers, 2003 all NBA All-Star team jerseys, which were awesome. That was a great pick. Hank Aaron, Braves blue, Rangers powder blue throwback, Oklahoma Nike Pro Combat all whites, which is, I think, what you were talking about, sort of, right?
Yes, although I don't remember that specific jersey.
Anything off the list for you?
Yeah, like LSU football. Well, you mean LSU in general. I just think LSU has, I think, gold and purple or yellow and purple are fantastic colors. I love the LSU football uniforms. I love the classic, you know, white top, yellow pants look. I people don't like Notre Dame, but I think Notre Dame has a really good looking uniform. I'm going to just come out and say it. Houston Oilers, like the baby aqua blue, baby blue, powder blue, whatever you want to call them. I think it's unbelievable that we can't just get that back in Tennessee. Or like, I really wish like the Titans like would just like give the Oilers brand back to Houston so they could rebrand the Texas as the Oilers. I think that'd be really cool, even though they share similar colors. I like when Oregon wears their actual throwback uniforms, football.
Yeah.
Like they take a break, from one of their, like, you know, 10,000 combinations and just do the classic Oregon colors, Oregon. What else am I missing? I like when the Patriots do the old school throwback, the AFL uniforms with the red,
with the jerseys. Guy on it.
Yeah. Pat the Patriot, where he's actually hiking the football before they went to just the disembodied Patriot head. The 49ers, where they have the black outlines on the numbers, like Jerry Rice wore in the 90s. University of Miami at certain points.
True, yeah. They had like the all black uniforms that were really cool. But yeah, damn.
Well,
there's so many.
I don't like when they went to like the things up on the shoulders that look like arena football uniforms, which are kind of cool, but they're just not as classic as what I remember seeing. Denver Broncos, John Elway era, like before John Elway, like
hyper orange and blue helmet.
Yeah, before, like, we just with the black D with the horse coming out of it. That's a lot of football. Orlando Magic, did we say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magic classic, Shaq and Penny Magic ones are so cool.
Jeff would say Penn State.
I'm sure, yeah. I think they're Penn State's are, they're not boring, but like they don't pop off, I think, in the same way. Blue and white is like a very classic combination, but I don't think, for example, for another like it's not really monochromatic, but like the Raiders, for example, black and white, I think, just really pops in the sport of football compared to blue and white in some instances, at least dark blue, like the Penn State one.
Allen Iverson era Sixers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are cool. They were busy too, that logo, and that still looked really good.
I think the Mets have nice uniforms.
I think it depends on the era, but yeah. Yankees has always been classic, but yeah, no, a lot of good uniforms in sports, I guess, is the point here. They do be having good uniforms.
They're just, I like Carolina Panthers. They got good color combination.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, no, again, point is a lot of good uniforms in sports. Let's just go through our drafts real quick. Trill, you had Kelly Green Eagles, Canadians, UCLA basketball, 94, Larry Johnson Hornets teal, the Expos from the Grissom era. I had Chargers powder blues, Raiders black, 90s purple Suns, the teal Pistons, and the 2018 Nigeria World Cup. Audience had the Brazil's orange yellows, the Astros orange, yellow, and red stripes, the Raptor purple, the 94 USA soccer team denim, and Texas all white football. Pretty good draft, I think, for the audience. The first experience with the czar, I think, not too bad. So good job to Cole.
I think Cole nailed it. He had like some good picks, and then he went off script, which I liked, which you never get with an aggregate audience, because you're just not going to get critical mass of people saying denim soccer jerseys.
Exactly. There's you won't be able to get the rally the support behind that vote. Sorry, it just won't happen. But so fun draft. We'll be back on Wednesday, I believe, with Jeff. And I don't know what movie we're doing just yet, but again, we'll post it on Twitter and on the LSP Reddit, wherever else. But until then, I'm Ken Jack. This is Trill, and
have a good week at the box office, folks.